beautiful.
Thank you.
It was just thrilling.
Welcome to the Emmy Award.
Grammy Award.
The Tony Award goes to.
Give it up.
And the Oscar goes to.
Matthew McConaughey.
Legendary Smokey Robinson.
Joan Rivers.
Rivers. Welcome to the Fox site. The legendary.
I love you.
It's time to take a step in the Foxlight with your host, Michael Tamaro.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another groundbreaking edition of In the Foxlight. I'm your host, the ever-charming, the ever-graying, but increasingly sexy Michael Tamaro. And because this is radio, you can imagine the best. Today we got Suicide Squad coming away. The legendary Steve Guttenberg will be joining us. And I'm joined in studio today with screenwriter and executive producer Michael Ressigliano, who has a new movie coming out, The Brooklyn Banker. And then the increasingly lovely Fox News radio host, Michelle Polino, out in L.A. We're going to get to Michael's new movie soon. But first, we're going to start with Michelle Polino. Hello, my darling.
Hello, hello. How are you?
What's going on?
Oh, there's so much going on right now. And I have to thank Clint Eastwood for just giving me so much material to use. I mean,
he's back.
He is back with a vengeance, I might add. And no chair.
No chair.
No empty chair this time around. Of course, I'm referring to his appearance at, what was it, 4 years ago? The
2012 Republican Convention.
Right. 2012 Republican Convention, where he was talking to an empty chair. And I have to say, he talked about that recently, saying, you know, he kind of made fun of himself a little bit. He said he just wanted to do something different. He just was watching every speaker go up there and do the same thing, talk about the same thing. And he said he was trying to do something different, even though it didn't go.
He did.
Yeah, it was different. And but everybody made fun of it. But recently he was in the news. He did a joint interview with his son, who you spoke to recently, Scott Eastwood.
I have spoken to him many times. We go back.
You go back?
I go back.
I'd like to go back with him.
Yeah, I bet you would, Michelle.
I would like to go back with and forth.
You remember, he was on the cover of Town and Country. That was when he kind of made his first big public splash.
Right.
And I flew out to England on a moment's notice for not even a full day to interview him at his flat. He was shooting the movie Fury at the time.
Okay.
Which is another David Ayer's movie. And we had a great time. He's such a nice fella. I was going to say kid. He's not a kid.
He's not a kid.
He's not a kid.
He's a man.
He came back for another movie he was doing with Fox, The Longest Ride, and then we were doing the carpet Monday night. It was a huge carpet for Suicide Squad, big cast, 10 stars. You could imagine the kind of show
right
it was. And it was, you know, long carpet, the whole thing, and he was coming up and kind of eyed each other, the whole thing, and his publicist was all set to pull him away. You've had that moment, Michelle.
I have had that moment many times.
And you know they're never going to get them again.
Yes, never.
And he
did you grab him?
He's turned around to his publicist and said, no. I have to do him. I know this guy.
Aww,
I know.
Nice. I like that. I like when that happens.
No, me too.
Yeah, yeah. They're very few and far between moments, but when they happen, you kind of cherish them. And you cherish the actor or actress that does that.
I do. But I digress. I make
you
digress.
Did. You did.
I did.
We can easily jump back on it.
Okay.
Eastwood told Esquire that Donald Trump is on to something because he secretly, everybody's getting tired of political correctness and kissing up. He said that's the kiss-ass generation we're in right now. Now, he followed that up with saying he has the millennials have particularly irked him.
He they called irk them. Me.
Yeah, he called them the P-word generation.
Okay.
He said, you know,
the you partying know, generation.
Right, partying. No.
Yes.
You know, kitty cat.
Okay.
Everybody's walking on eggshells. He says we see people accusing people of being racist and all kind of stuff. When I grew up, those things weren't called racist. He admitted that he will not vote for Hillary Clinton in the general election, but he stopped short of endorsing Donald Trump, which is interesting.
Yeah.
And then TMZ got a hold of the actor-director leaving Craig's restaurant the other night, which is right down the street from us. And this time, he took on both political parties on the treatment of the Gold Star family that stood up and, of course, pulled out the Constitution at the Democratic Convention. Now, Eastwood says the Democrats use the Khan family as pawns at the convention. However, he equally gives it to GOP presidential nominee Trump. He clearly thinks Trump crossed the line in his now famous feud, which is interesting. And I think that's why he stopped short of endorsing him.
You know, he's Clint Eastwood. He can do and say whatever he wants at this
he
point. He's what, 86,
can.
I want to say?
I thought he was like 82 or 83. I'll
okay, maybe you're right. Yeah, look that up.
I will.
But I don't know what your experience has been like with him, but the last couple of years, especially since that 2012 skit routine
right.
at the RNC, his handlers are like...
86, you're right.
Yeah, his handlers are like they freak out whenever
yep.
he...
I agree.
Because they're so worried about him going into politics or yep. wandering off script for whatever reason. We have the hardest time when we're doing American Sniper. They would make us, you know, swear up and down that we wouldn't go into politics, which I never do. It's never really my thing, even though we're sort of talking about it here.
Right.
But they're like, they live in fear of that.
Yes.
So I can't imagine... I'm a little shocked that they let him do this interview, but maybe, you know, he is Clint and he does what he wants to do.
Well, I tell you, at 82 years of age...
86.
86. He probably doesn't, you know, he's like my father.
Yeah.
He's like, at this point, what are you going to do to me?
Yeah,
I'm just going to say what I want to say and that's it.
Go ahead, make my day.
Make my day. I love it. Yeah, he has carte blanche here. It doesn't matter. That's why I laugh when the publicists pull him away because I'm like, come on now. You know, he's the best political... This is what's happening right now. This is what's on the minds, even though movies are on the minds of everybody, but this is also on the minds, and both of them are entertainment as far as I'm concerned.
And you know what? It sells tickets. It keeps him relevant. He has a new movie coming out, Sully, right?
Right.
I think. And this Scott has a new movie. They're actually going to go head-to-head for the first time ever in the box office, I believe, in October when both of their movies... He has Snowden coming out, and the father has the movie Sully.
Sully.
So that should be very interesting. Look, it all helps sell tickets at the end of the day.
It does.
Yes.
It totally does. So another while we're talking politics and
here
and
we go. You're
stars,
dragging me into the weeds today, Michelle.
I am. I'm dragging you through the weeds, but you love it.
Yes.
They tickle you. Caitlyn Jenner has not come out. There's another GOP Hollywood type has not come out and publicly supported Donald Trump for president. However, she backs the Republican Party because that's who she is.
Mm-hmm.
That's who she is in her core. She talked to Bill Simmons on HBO's Any Given Wednesday.
I have not outwardly supported anybody. I am here to help since I'm on the Republican side, to help the entire Republican Party do a better job when it comes to LGBT issues. For that reason, I stay kind of on the conservative side.
Mm-hmm. So
I'm here to save lives. That's why I'm here. I won't vote for Trump, but I'll go all in for Ted Cruz.
Oh, right. It seems odd. But at the same point, this whole transition seems odd to many people. So I think what makes her so...
No pun intended.
Right. None at all. I think what makes her so interesting is it's almost like she's lived about five or six different lives in one. She also, again, talked about how it was easier to come out as transgendered than it was to come out as a Republican. It was an interesting interview. If you have time to sit down and watch it, it was one of my favorites this week.
Where was it?
On Bill Simmons, HBO's show Any Given Wednesday.
I'm going to have to check it out.
Yes, for sure.
I love Kate. I do.
I do, too. Again, just an interesting human being. Just at the core, just so interesting. She recently talked about being in Las Vegas for the first time since her transition, and mm-hmm. she used to go there as Bruce Jenner and just take two suitcases, one as Caitlyn and one as Bruce, and she would just go out on the strip dressed as Caitlyn Jenner, and nobody would know. And it was like she was living this dual life, and now she said it was just so much more comfortable going there. It was so much easier going mm-hmm. there as Caitlyn, having not to deal with the dual personality aspect, making sure she got all the nail polish off when she had to go and do her Bruce thing.
Not to mention the dual suitcases.
Right. All that luggage has got to drag you down, you know what I'm saying?
Poor Bruce is carrying a lot of luggage.
It's what kept him so thin.
There you go. Is that the secret? Because I need a little help.
I need... Oh, you're doing fine. Oh, you look great the other night, Dal.
Oh, God. What else do you got, Michelle?
Some kind of sad news. I don't know if you remember the man who played the Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
Opposite Jeff Bridges, he, a.k.a. the dude in the Coen Brothers 1998 film. He died. David Huddleston. He had a career that spanned, gosh, we grew up with him, watching him in television and movies. He had more than 60 films. He, of course, was the mayor in the comedy classic Blazing Saddles. He was the John Wayne film Rio Lobo, Smokey and the Bandit 2, in the 1985 Santa Claus film, in which he played, of course, the title role. He was a kind of portly actor. He died of heart and kidney disease in Santa Fe, New Mexico. One of his last on-screen appearances came as Danny DeVito's old business partner on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
He will be missed.
He will be missed, for sure. That's the news from Hollywood
today. That's the news from Hollywood. Well, you know, Michelle, big movie opening up this weekend at the box office, in case you haven't heard.
Oh, yeah.
Suicide Squad. Have you seen it?
I have not seen it yet, plan on tonight.
You should. I have to say, I am a little tired of the superhero genre. I checked out at Iron Man, and I maybe saw part of the one of the Avengers movies, but this I really enjoyed.
It's getting such bad reviews.
There's so much hate towards this movie, so much critical hate. But I think the fans are really going to enjoy it. The characters were so interesting. The performances were so interesting. In particular, Jared Leto, who plays Mr. J, a.k.a. the Joker. You know, he's one of those guys who goes all in on these roles. He's a method actor.
Well, he did this in a very method way, I heard.
He did. He never broke character while he was on set or at home, apparently. And we sat down with him a couple of days ago, and he described to me how he got into character. Take a listen.
Congratulations. I love this movie.
Thank you.
And I'm not a typical superhero fan, but I love how you guys sort of flipped the whole genre on its head. Is that what appealed to you?
Yeah, it was. David made it clear he wanted to do something different from the very beginning, and that was really appealing. And of course, the opportunity to reinterpret one of cinema's greatest villains was impossible to say no to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have Jack Nicholson on one side and Heath Ledger on the other, but you really put your own stamp on this character. Who did you look to for inspiration?
Well, I have so much respect for Jack Nicholson, for Heath Ledger's performance, for all of the work that's been done on the Joker. It was clear that you had to walk in a completely new and different direction. Those unforgettable performances are so special, you had to leave them as they are and pull from other sources. So we went on a journey and created something just completely new and different.
Was it a hard character to sort of shake off at the end of the day?
It was a little hard. You know, some of this becomes habit when you commit in such a deep way, and some of it you really have fun with, so it's a little, the voice or the laugh or the sense of humor, some of that stuck around a little while.
The purring.
Where did that
come from?
I'm so happy to hear that the purring is in there still.
Yeah.
Because I asked somebody earlier about the purring. It was so weird. And I was doing another thing on set, in some of the scenes. I was always smelling people. Is that
yes.
in there?
Yes, yes.
Do I smell someone? I was smelled everyone. I would smell people's crotch and armpits. It was crazy. I had this thing. It was very animalistic. But the purring, where is the purring at? I haven't seen the film.
In a couple of scenes, yeah.
Oh, great. Yeah, he was this like little...
Yes.
Right? It was like, I can't do it so well anymore because I haven't done it so long. But I don't know. It was a very strange... I think when he got excited and he was close to someone, he would start like...
It was very chilling, to say the least.
You call it, growl, purl, whatever. Purr, whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway.
What does someone like David Ayers bring to this sort of...
He brings a lot of, like, a lot of dysfunctionality. He's out of his mind.
Yeah.
He's like, he is the perfect, though, in hindsight, he is the perfect person to be the captain of that squad. Because, you know, the Joker's not really in the squad. The Joker can't be controlled or contained, and, you know, I'm very hard to control and contain, too. But he was the perfect person for that group of crazy people. And so it was serendipitous. And, you know, he gave me a very beautiful gift early on is he gave me the gift of trust. And he just, he took off the cuffs and just let me loose. And that was the best thing, to have that faith in him.
And it really shows on the screen. All right, thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you.
All right, well, Jared Leto wasn't the only one who sort of went to the dark side when it comes to getting into these really fun, deep, dark characters. Adewale, who plays the Killer Croc, told me a little bit about what it was like and what he had to do to get into the mindset of a cannibal and some of the extreme makeup and the process that was involved in turning into the Killer Croc.
A lot of dynamic going on in this room.
Yeah.
A lot of personalities in this movie. What was a typical day at the office like for you guys?
Oh, man.
This guy's office was...
Tell me about my office. Croc crib.
His crib was like cannibalism, eating people. It was disgusting. Just to walk in and go, Addy's crazy, man. And you leave.
David Ayers, man. He's the crazy one. He's like, hey, Addy, this guy's a cannibal. I need to research cannibals. I was like, you mean really eats people? Yeah. That's how we're going. So, you know, as Adam said, I went in and did research. Used to listen to these cannibal confessionals from real-life cannibal, say Sagawa, and play it every day. Drove my prosthetic team crazy. And I had a croc crib built with, you know, bones and documentaries about cannibals. I mean, they would come in and they would get goose pimples. But, you know, that was Killer Croc. But the day on the set... It was a party, man. Willieville, Will wow. Smith had built a recreation
like a
room
home.
For all the actors to actually
pool
party
table,
in between
ping-pong,
takes.
Could watch anything. It was having Will as our main guy.
As our cheerleader.
Yes.
Gets you through a grinding shoot where you have to wear, what did you have?
50-pound bodysuit.
Yeah.
You don't sit down or your legs are going to lose its blood flow.
Now, I knew I had to ask Jared Leto this question, and I wasn't expecting to ask anyone else this, but how do you shake that off at the end of the day?
Well, I went to Zanzibar in Tanzania for 2 weeks.
Uh-huh.
I hired a private beach, and I sat there just looking at the water and just let it all wash out.
Yeah.
And Adewale was back.
It's good to have you back.
You cannot sit in that space too long. And also, just getting used to my face. Because the thing about, you know, submerging yourself in, you know, 2 inches of prosthetics for 5 hours for 5 months, mm-hmm. you forget, like, to get used to who you are because you're seeing. And just getting used to me again was an interesting process. But
my
I'm back.
My wife is a clinical psychologist, so she helped me out. But we enjoy the ropes very much.
Real quick, if you could play any other character in this movie, who would it be?
I think everybody would like to play Joker, yeah.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, both of these guys probably had a very hard time shaking these characters off.
Well,
you just
I wanting to be the one dating either one of them during this period. That's all I'm saying. You know what I mean? I'm like, honey, what do you want to do? Well, you know, let me see your arm for a minute.
Or necessarily be co-starring up against them. Apparently, Jared Leto was known for sending gifts to his co-stars throughout this shoot. You know, sending dead rats, and to the guy who plays the croc, he sent a dead pig and told him he had to eat it, which he did. So these, you know.
That's kind of gross. Seriously.
Yeah.
That's real. That crosses the line a little bit.
I think it does cross the line. But this movie was made for about $175 million. It's looking to gross about $140 to $150, which will probably be the biggest August opening of all time, I think, Michelle.
I think what's really interesting to me is watching the landscape of the summer movie change. And I think what we're seeing now is, and Suicide Squad is going to be huge, and I believe it's going to do better than 160. I think it's probably going to hit the 170 mark this weekend. But what I also see is a changing movie landscape. I spoke with Fandango's one of the people at Fandango this week, and we talked about how it used to be just Memorial Day and July 4th. That's
yeah.
when the tent poles would be premiering, but now they're kind of landscaped across the entire summer, a few in July, a few in June, and a few in August now, because August is becoming a really popular month.
It really is. And even the spring. I mean, you look at the spring that Hollywood had this year, was
right.
probably the best it's had in a very long time, and it probably
April.
Outperformed April, March and April, starting with Deadpool. probably outperformed a lot of the movies, you know, this summer. You know, the tent poles aren't holding up the tent lately.
They're not.
They're not.
They need to seek a doctor.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And this is really Hollywood's last chance, Suicide Squad, to really pull out a very successful summer because it's been, I think, down weekend to weekend and maybe, you know, up a percentage or two thanks to the very strong
I'm so happy that we're up against them. You know?
Yes. Speaking of summer movies.
Nice film coming up against a $200 million blockbuster.
Michael Rossigliano, who has a new movie coming out called Brooklyn Banker. He's the screenwriter and executive producer of the flick. Michael, welcome to the Foxlight.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us a little bit about this movie.
Well, it's it takes place in 1973 Brooklyn. And it is it revolves around a guy by the name of Santo Bastucci, who's a legitimate guy, and he kind of gets dragged into working for organized crime through his kind of dim-witted father-in-law, played by Paul Sorvino. And it's really a look of what it was really like in 1973 Brooklyn, how people lived, and how the organized crime operated. It's a very different take on the genre.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're a lawyer by training.
Yes.
This is your first movie.
My first feature film, absolutely.
So how did this all come about? First feature film with Paul Sorvino in it.
Yeah,
hello.
Congratulations.
Yeah, how did this all come about?
About 5 years ago, I had an idea. My family's from Brooklyn, Williamsburg. My uncle was the pastor or the priest at Our Lady of Mount Carmel Church. And I grew up on those stories. I grew up on Long Island.
Garden City, Long Island.
But those were my bedtime stories about what it was like growing up with no money in mm-hmm. Williamsburg and bartering and what all the characters were like and what it was like, you know, living in railroad apartments and mm-hmm. with no money. And it really it resonated with me. So when I had this idea for a film, I said, you know what? I don't want to be the 85-year-old guy that says, I had a great idea once. I could have done that. So I said, I'm going to go out and do it. And I wrote the script and was lucky enough to attract Federico Castelluccio, our director.
Yeah.
And from there, we just went forward and we got it done. And it's been a great ride. It's been a great ride.
Now, did you have any training in script writing before, or did you kind of have to go research how all that was done?
I did not. I actually I failed English in college, where we both went to Hofstra. So I just started reading scripts. And for whatever reason, you know, legal training, you know, the way the structure of a script is written opposed to a novel is a lot different. And my mind, you know, kind of latched onto that. And I was able to formulate a plan. And after reading 50 scripts and a book on it, you know, I just started writing and you find your own voice.
Yeah.
You know, so that was, kind of the genesis of how this came about.
So I have to explain to you, Michelle, how all this having Michael came about today. So I feel
like I'm family here. I got to tell you.
There's a little bit of that going on, Michelle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I get a phone call from my mother. Michael, are you? She really doesn't sound like that, but that's just kind of like the voice. That's the voice I hear.
We're going with it.
Michael, are you covering the Brooklyn Banker? I'm like, what the heck are you talking about, Ma? Michael Rossigliano, yeah. His mother wants to know. I'm like, okay. So I Googled the whole thing. So Michael and I connected. I'm like, come in. Let's hear about the movie. We'll promote the whole thing. It's a big deal. Opens up in New York today in L.A. as well.
Yes.
And then what are your hopes for it?
Well, we're in 10 cities across the country. We're at we're in the city at the Village Cinemas as well as in Malvern on the island. And then at the Lamel. I believe in L.A. Is that it?
Yeah.
And then in other cities across the country, and it comes
Lamley Theater,
and then it comes out on VOD. But you know, it's funny you're talking about your mom because you know, my mother calls me
when there's an Italian boy, there's an Italian mother lurking behind.
Oh, yes,
but see, I'm half Irish and my mother's Irish, so
I'm half Irish too.
Yes, so I
get this call. It's like Michael. Listen to me. What are you doing?
The
I'm like,
Irish
Mom,
mother.
It's 7 o'clock in the morning. I'm, you know, just getting out of bed.
I'm
well,
getting coffee.
This is who you're going to call. You're going to call Mrs. DeMiro. And her son does it. And I'm like, oh, okay, Mom, okay. And then, like, by 9 o'clock, it's like, have you called him? I'm like, I will take care of it. So luckily, we were introduced, and I was able to come on your show, and I do thank you. And Michelle, I thank you as well.
And we thank you for coming on.
It's a pleasure. And I'm going to go out and see it just for you, and I really can't wait to see it.
Yes, thank you, yeah.
Brooklyn Banker, where can people find the information on how to catch it?
Brooklynbanker.com.
Okay.
We also have a Facebook page and Twitter and all that sort of stuff. And we had the premiere on Tuesday, and it comes out today. So we're very excited and God willing, you know, we're making the sequel.
We'll see you at the Academy Awards.
Yeah, that'd be nice. And I trust you. I will come see you on the red carpet. You'll be with me. You'll be with me on the red carpet.
Fantastic. Nice. Love it, Michael. Thank you so much. Good luck to you. And now, next up, guys, let's face it. Our next guest probably defined all the movies we grew up with in the 80s. Steve Guttenberg. Hello. Yes, Michelle, I know. You want another moment where you want to be in studio with us, don't you?
I do.
Steve Guttenberg, thank you for stepping into the Foxlight today.
Thank you for having me, and pleasure to be here.
It's so great to see you. Now, we're going to get to the movie. You have a new movie coming out, Tulantula, on Sci-Fi on August 6th.
Yes.
Saturday.
That's the European translation, Tulantula.
Is that how you say it?
Tulantula.
There you go. Yes. I love that. We're going to get to it, but first, former President Bill Clinton recently mentioned watching all the Police Academy movies at the DNC.
Yeah.
Where were you at the time, and what were you thinking?
I was in bed with my girlfriend, and we were
watching TV.
It's always good to be there. And we were watching TV, and I was so thrilled that he mentioned it. And actually, it's Truth in Politics, because I'd seen him personally in private. Uh-huh. And he mentioned that he had a tough few days. And he took Police Academy out of the series, and he watched all six. And he really got a kick out of them. And then also Chelsea mentioned it in her speech, which was really terrific. And, you know, there's a couple of things that it meant to me. A, I was thrilled it wasn't James Bond. It wasn't Ghostbusters. It wasn't Star Wars.
Yeah.
And also, the most important piece that I think we can glean from that is recreation is so important. Hard work is really important. But recreation and resting the mind. And, you know, today companies make it a mandatory that you take vacation. My dad, when I was younger, only for 14 years didn't take a vacation. 52 weeks a year he worked and took the extra money from the vacation and spent it on us children.
Yeah.
So it's just it was a great metaphor for you've got to relax. Even if you've got the most important job on the planet, you got to take it easy a little bit.
You got to take time for Police Academy in the whole series.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Now, your movies have grossed over $1 billion.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Why is it incredible? What the hell are you talking about?
Well, exactly.
You think I could do that? Wait a minute. Why? You have other people in here, and they're all better than me?
Because I'm Jewish?
Is that what this is getting down to?
Oh, stop, Steve Guttenberg. I'm saying no one should be shocked at that number. It's a big number because starting back in 1980, let's go through the list. Diner, okay? The Day After, which was a big deal on TV, I remember not being able to watch that because we were told the schools were like, oh, it's scary for the kids, the whole thing.
Actually, they had to have the defense secretary, and you had have all these generals on after The Day After to make everybody calm down about nuclear war because people were so crazed about that event.
It was wild. See, these guys have no idea what that was about. Yeah. So continue with the list. Cocoon, Bad Medicine, Police Academy 2, Short Circuit, loved, Police Academy 4, Three Men and a Baby, Cocoon, The Return, Three Men and a Lady. You were part of the movies that defined a decade, and for me, growing up, actually. What was that whole period like for you?
Well, you know what? It's no different than it is today. You know, I've always led a very balanced life. You know, I get up. I'm an early bird in the morning. I get up. I exercise. I eat well. You know, I speak to my family. You know, I do my prayers, and I go into the day. And my job is to be an actor. So I start 10 hours of that. And whether I'm filming a big movie or filming a small movie or not filming at all, doing a play, doing Shakespeare, doing something important, something not important, every day is the same to me.
Yeah.
I'm here to practice kindness and compassion, and I pay attention. I make decisions, and I make my day worthwhile and meaningful, and I raise my standards every day. I raise my standards. It's not that I cut people out, but there are things that I don't need to be around. So every day, there's no difference from making $1 million a day or 2 cents a day. Every day is the same.
It's a kinder, gentler Steve Guttenberg.
You've always been that way, though, I think. I've always been that way. My mom and dad are that way.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up in a great house with a great family and a very funny family. Mm. And I always say everything I need to know, I learned at my parents' kitchen table.
I love that line. I read that on your website today. It's a great line.
Oh, yeah.
As an actor, though, I would imagine it has to be great to be a part of a movie franchise where there's multiple
Yeah, I only do sequels.
It's job security.
I don't even do the first one anymore. I do the sequel. I want the money.
But do you worry about that? I mean, is it great to have that in terms of job security?
Well, it's, you know, listen, no actor has job security. You know, every series is going to end, every movie is going to end. And even if you're Gregory Peck, or you, at one point they stop calling. At one point they stop calling the great Billy Wilder. So, you know, you realize that you're a fungible commodity.
Yeah.
And I'm thrilled to be able to make something. And actually, someone told me today that I am the only actor in the history of film or Screen Actors Guild to have the most sequels. I have 7 films that went to sequel. So I'm really thrilled about that. But listen, I'm lucky. I like to make a living. Yeah. I like to provide for my family. So, you know, I'm lucky when something goes to sequel.
And I understand when you got started in this business, an agent who was introduced to you by your godfather,
yeah,
told you you're never going to make it.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have the right look,
yeah,
the right personality.
Great, it was not far from here. It was on right near Columbus Circle. And he said to me, he would say, look, you know, I know you want to be an actor and, you know, you did Shakespeare, you did some, you know, off-Broadway and everything. He goes, I'm going to give you great advice. And I'm like, wow. He goes,
oh, boy.
Advice that I would give my son.
Oh, boy.
So I'm thinking, wow, advice to give my son. This is going to be amazing. He said, I want you to get up. And I'm like, yeah? He goes, I want you to get up and I want you to walk. No, I want you to run to the elevator. I'm like, yeah? Run to the elevator? And he goes, I want you to push that button. And when that elevator opens, get in. And I want you to take that down to the bottom, yeah? And he goes, I want you to run out of the building and never think about show business again. He said, because you're the last guy I would ever choose to be a movie star.
And that was your motivational speech for the day.
I never heard a word he said. Yeah. I said, okay.
So what was it in you that, because I would have been a mess after that. I probably would have gone into insurance.
Well, the modern saying is hot mess. Am I right? A hot mess.
Yes, it would have been a hot mess.
Hot mess.
mess. What was it in you that just said, no, you're wrong?
Oh, because I always think that. I don't think anybody knows anything.
Yeah.
You know, I don't care what you tell me. It doesn't matter. I'm smart. I know what's happening. I know what's good for me. I know what my investment of time is. I know where I should be. I know it all. And I'm actually right a lot of times. And there's nothing wrong with knowing yourself.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with being smart. There's nothing wrong with believing in your own thoughts and your own instincts. You don't always have to say, I'm an idiot. I don't know anything. I'm always wrong. You don't have to say that. And my mom and dad always believed me. They said, you're the best. You always walk into that room, whether it's Harry Cipriani mm-hmm. or the diner on the corner. You're the best. You belong. You're great. Doesn't mean that you can pick your nose in the air and you know that you're better than anybody else. But you can run as fast as anybody else. You're a good actor. You're a great actor. You're a smart guy. You know about money. You know about where to live. You know what to do. You know what to wear. You don't have to depend on anybody mm-hmm. else. And your brain is very powerful. So I've always thought that. Now, I have great people around me like Judy Katz.
Judy Katz.
Who's queen of all media.
Legendary.
Legendary. Knows everything. You know, and you listen to people who are experts in their field. But you're allowed to generate ideas and come up with thoughts because that's what you're here for. So I've always been ambitious. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had a paper route. I had a pool cleaning service. I had a lawn mowing service. I was a newspaper boy. You know,
you've done it all.
I've done it all.
Do you do motivational speaking?
All the time, but nobody listens. I do it.
Judy's nodding. She's on top of that too. Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, because I think we all have to believe in ourselves. We're all smart. We all have – if you sit down and use your brain, you'll be surprised at what you come up with and what you can become. And also, it's very important to jump over that wall. I had an uncle who always said to me, a wall will come up in your mind. You've got to jump over that wall. Sometimes you got to –
We're great at doing that, aren't we?
Sorry?
We're great at putting up our own roadblocks.
We are. Oh, you can't do that. You're not as smart as that guy. That guy's smarter than you. That guy's better looking than you. That guy's going to get the girl more than you. That guy's going to make more money than you. Those are those walls that come up. And you go, whoa, man. No, I'm going to go talk to that girl. I'm going to go try to get that job. I'm going to go try to get a better discount on this car. I'm going to try. And if you jump over that wall, you'll say, gee, I got over the wall. Sometimes it's hard to get over the wall, but yeah. You can get over that wall. You've got to believe in yourself. You've got to pay attention and raise your standards. Raise your standards. You know, always say every day, I'm going to be better. You know, and also with people. You know, when some guy is sort of a nasty guy or that kind of guy who's sort of trying to pull you into friendship, it's not for me. I'm looking for something better. You know, when someone wants to sell you something, it's not for you. I'm looking for something better. And also pay attention. You got to pay attention to what you're doing right now, who you're talking to right now. Mm-hmm. I'm not in the future. I'm not in the past. That's what's great about movies. They make you stay there.
Focused. I mean, I had the honor of being part of a shoot last year for Independence Day Resurgence, the second.
Oh, the show.
Yeah. And it was an incredible experience just to be there. First of all, I learned right away it's not something I want to do.
Okay.
Because it was like 14-hour day.
Sure.
You know, they shoot from – Roland Emmerich shoots from every single angle.
Sure.
Which I imagine is how it's done.
Sure.
Because this is like one and done. You go on with your life.
Some guys shoot it an 8-hour day. Clint Eastwood shoots an 8-hour day.
He shoots fast, right?
Really fast.
Yeah. But that said, this Saturday night, Sci-Fi Network.
Yep.
Huge event.
Tulava Tulantula,
a sequel. But you did the first.
I did the first, the Lava Lantula. They talked me into doing the first, yeah. So I did Lava Lantula.
So when you got that first call from your agents who said, okay, Steve, we got this part.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to go up against lava spewing spiders, tarantulas.
Yeah. Well,
what was going through your mind?
I said yes, and I'll tell you why. Because the same company came to me years before with Sharknado.
Yeah.
And I was sitting with my mom and dad, and the producers was describing the show on the speakerphone with my mom and dad. And I'm looking at them going, are you kidding? Because the guy goes, hey, here's the part. You're a lifeguard. I'm going, wow, lifeguard. Take a shirt off, be all pumped up. Great. Okay. And you're looking for your daughter. Oh, I'm looking for my daughter. And you're driving a Jeep with, you know, some beautiful sidekick girl. Wow, I'm driving a Jeep. And L.A. has a hurricane. There's water everywhere. Thinking, oh, man, water. I got to be wet. But okay, I'm driving. I'm a hero. I'm looking around. Where is she? And then there's a tornado in the ocean. Ooh, tornado in the ocean. Oh, my God, tornado in the ocean. I'm exciting. I'm a hero. And then tornado picks up all the sharks. And pick up all the sharks and then dumps them in the water. Yeah. And then a guy picks up the toilet and the shark comes out and bites his hiney. And then he goes out and then you're shaving and a shark comes out of the sink. You know, you're eating and a shark comes off the plate. And I go, what kind of movie is this? And he goes, yeah, that's what it is. And I go,
smash hit.
I said, let me call you back. And I went, this sounds like the most insane, idiotic movie I ever heard in my life. My mom and dad said, you can't do this. I go, I can't do this. Call back my agent. I go, I can't do this movie. Cut two. You know, they made four of them. So the same company calls me and says, hey, we got a movie about lava-eating spiders, you know, lava-spewing spiders. I said, yes. Yes. And they go, you didn't even read the script. Yes. You don't even know how much we're going to pay you. I go, I don't care. It's yes. And, you know, I jump right in. In this Tulava Tulantula, we've got Michael Winslow and Marion Ramsey's, who was in Police Academy and still my buddies. And then Tawny Welch and Tyrone Power Jr.
Oh, wow.
From Cocoon. They're in the movie. And also, interestingly enough, not to be too serious, but, you know, we're in a really racial divide right now. And we've got so much tension in the country. And the fact that Michael and Marion and I are friends and we don't see race, we don't see religion, we don't see height, we don't see clothing, we don't see money. All we see is our friendship, which is a great example that, you know, no matter what background you come from, we can be friends.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something that we're missing in all of this stop the hatred and all that. That's not going to do anything. We've got to realize on the ground, on the earth, that we're friends.
Yeah.
You know, and when you look in somebody's eyes, there's no color in eyes.
Yeah.
You know, we all have the same eyes. And that's where we're communicating. We're talking, you know, we're friends.
Well, you guys in Hollywood seems really to be changing very quickly and sort of leading the way on that front. I'm big movie coming up this weekend, Suicide Squad, which is based off the DC comics. I don't know if you're a big comic book fan.
Yeah, I like them, sure.
But it's probably one of the most diverse casts I've seen for a major action picture that's, you know, summer blockbuster.
Sure.
And they really went out of their way to kind of change some of the characters so it actually reflects America and what it looks like.
Sure.
So Hollywood seems to be...
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. You know, I'm a big Will Smith fan.
Oh, he was incredible.
Yeah. Did you see the film?
I saw the film the other night, yes.
Oh, great. How was it?
It was great.
Oh,
it's not my thing. I'm not a big comic book fan, the whole thing.
Oh, no?
But
you like the first Iron Man?
I love the first
Iron
Man.
Me too. First Iron Man.
But I checked out after I just kind of stopped after that.
But the first one was great.
It was incredible.
It really,
really was smart.
It's storytelling.
Yes.
It's storytelling. It's character, it's plot, it's pace, it's rhythm, it's tone. And that's the same for a movie like Police Academy or Birth of a Nation. all movies, all stories, all plays have to have the same grounded classical structure.
Yes.
And that's what makes the audience love, whether it's Bugs Bunny, Courageous Cat, whether it's Suicide Squad, whether it's To Lava Tulantula, it's all about storytelling and classical storytelling.
If you do it well, people will watch.
Absolutely.
That's my whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, sci-fi has done such a great job of with this sort of genre.
Sure.
You know, making these movies, you know, in a very cost-effective way. What's it like to be part of that whole experience?
Oh, it's great. Well, we had a great director, Nick Simon, really, really talented guy. And Mike Mendez did the first one.
Yeah.
And these are classically trained directors. They went to AFI. They're smart. Mm-hmm. They know what they're doing. They know how to make characters work, tone work. And it's great to be part of something that is a great ice cream sundae. No, it's not pheasant under glass. But we're not making pheasant under glass. Right now we're making a sundae.
Yeah.
And you know what? You need a great ice cream sundae as much as you need, you know, filet mignon. You need great ice cream and how to make an egg cream and how to make a banana split. These are really important to make a great chocolate bar.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thrilled. I had great people to work with.
Yeah. It seems, you know, if you look at the movies this summer, one big franchise after another kind of underperforming. You know,
yeah.
They all cost 100, even ours, Independence Day Resurgence was $125 million to produce, and they really didn't do what it was supposed to do. It seems like some of the big studios could take a page out of what you guys are doing on sci-fi and make some of these. Like Independence Day could be done for a lot cheaper, I think, in my mind.
Yeah. Well, I saw Independence Day, and I'm a big fan of it. You know,
I loved it.
Big fan of it. I had a great time. And I saw Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
You know, and I had a great time. And at the same time, what I thought was that we don't sometimes realize that the audience has ownership of this movie. It's not your movie anymore.
Yeah.
It's their movie, and you've got to pander to them. Sometimes they don't want you to be so clever.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they don't want a red Christmas tree. Just to go, we have always have green Christmas trees. Got to make it red. We don't want a red – sometimes the audience goes, we don't want a red Christmas tree. We want a green Christmas tree. You know, and you got to – and I've noticed that with my sequels too. You've got to pander to them. You've got to really kiss their ass.
Pay homage.
And yeah, because they own that movie.
Yeah.
They like what they like. They want the same thing, only a little different, but they want the same movie.
Yeah.
They basically want – that's why they're going to a sequel. They want to see the movie again.
Yeah.
And then you make it a little different, but not so different that they go, that's not my dog. That's not my friend.
Yeah.
What are you doing? You changed it so too much. Can't change something too much. It's a great, you know, the second Dumb and Dumber. They put two young guys in. They didn't use Jeff. And,
mm-hmm.
and what happens is, and Jim, and you find yourself alone and out in the cold because the audience goes, oh, no, you don't understand. You think I want a different movie. I want the same movie because I like the first one. But I can't see the first one again and again and again. I want to see the second one, but I want the same movie.
Yeah.
So I try to listen to that, you know. I'm no genius, but, I want to make a success.
That's a great point. In terms of being an actor today, you've had such a great career through the years. Is it a great time to be an actor with all these platforms and streaming? And it seems like it's just changing so quick.
It's a great time to be an actor anytime.
Yeah.
You know, Aristophanes, you know, and Socrates, you know, it was great to be an actor in Greece.
Yeah.
And 2,000 years ago. And it's great to be it. But and now the only thing is, 100 years ago, there were no film actors. Now there are, you know, it's a whole new game. But you have to be very careful about the success that comes with being a film actor or a television actor, because now you're known all over the world, and it's the new religion. You know, years ago, you know, I always say, you know, you have a movie star walking down Fifth Avenue, and you have Jesus walking down Fifth Avenue. Who's going to get mobbed more? And you have to think. I wonder, you know, because it's the new religion. You know, we're walking pieces of art.
Yeah.
You see somebody on the screen, and they go, "Oh my God, there they are! They're alive." You, as an actor, you have to be more vigilant about your ego,
mm-hmm.
and how important you are, and what difference you make politically, economically, globally, that you're just a person with a great job and that you know better than the guy who sweeps the streets or is a CEO of a company or president of the United States or the guy who works in the sewer. You know, you're no better than anybody else. And it's and today it's a great time to be an actor because you can really provide for your family.
Yeah.
But it's a dangerous time. And I'm talking to people on reality shows, commercials. I put us all into on the radio. We're all actors.
Social media stars, which is the yes. new thing, makes me yeah. nuts, but it's
you
there.
You have to be very, you know, you have to be smart about what you mean and who you are. Because at the end of the day, you come home, you know, even George Clooney has to take out the trash.
Yeah.
You know,
he's got to face them all.
Gregory Peck. Yeah, right. Gregory Peck.
She's a tough customer, I have a feeling.
I don't know, but I'm, you know, I'm using George Clooney as a metaphor, but what I'm saying is yeah. no matter who you are, you put on your pants one leg at a time. You're a person. You have to be respectful of other people. You know, you can think you're better in your performances, but when it comes down to it, you got to stand online like anyone else, you know, to get into the show, get into to buy your Starbucks or whatever. You got to stand online, you know, at the DMV where you are. You got to realize you're just a guy. You may have a great job. You might be well known, but I'm a big proponent of keeping everything in check.
Keeping it real. That's the New Yorker in you.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, man. I'm
good. You stay true to your
roots. You go on the subway and it's like 1,000
degrees very real.
Waiting, you know.
Yeah.
Very real.
Well, Steve Guttenberg, thank you so much for stopping by. You can catch Tulava, Tulantula this Saturday, August 6th, on Sci-Fi at 9
p.m.
We got it.
9 p.m.
We got it.
7 or 8 Central and all that kind of stuff.
And I'm sure they'll re-air it a bunch of times, too.
Yeah, they will.
Great. Can't wait to see it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's this week's edition of In the Foxlight podcast. For more, check InTheFoxlight.com right now.